Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com. Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is our last program of 2009 in studio today for Commodity Week. Ag economist from the University of Illinois, Daryl Good. Daryl, thanks for joining us for this last program of the 2009 season.
My pleasure, Todd. Good to be here.
It was an interesting year, without a doubt, in the commodity markets. Can you start in January of 2009 and maybe work our way forward and the things that happened?
Well, I think most of the events in the first half of the year were really centered around the supply side of the market. And I think if you start in the early part of the year, January, February, a lot of the focus was on the South American soybean crop and the unfolding drought that was occurring in Argentina. That brought with it a fair amount of strength in the soybean market as crop estimates got progressively smaller there. Simultaneously, China continued to be an aggressive buyer of soybeans, and that really put a lot of strength in the soybean market early in the calendar year. Then, of course, we quickly moved into a very delayed planting, spring planting season in the U.S. that started unfolding in March, April, with the weather and the weather forecast. And in Illinois in particular, I think we probably had a record late planted corn and soybean crops, and raised a lot of concerns then about yield potential with the late planting, not only in Illinois, but to a lesser extent, but late throughout the Midwest. That, again, put a lot of strength in the corn and soybean prices. And then that was followed with, in many ways, what we would consider to be a very, very favorable summer for corn and soybeans. Very cool, very wet. Some would argue maybe too cool and too wet, but in general, cool wet is good, particularly for the corn crop. And that resulted in prices weakening as the crop made progress, and we saw on a weekly basis pretty good crop ratings, and folks got pretty excited about potential for record yields of corn and soybeans. And then we followed that with a continuation of wet weather that really delayed harvest and brought some strength then back into the markets. So the roller coaster continued with that delayed harvest. And again, kind of a mixed picture on the demand side, with China continuing to be a big buyer of soybeans, and then late summer, early fall, weakness in corn exports. But at the same time, we saw ethanol production margins increase substantially from early fall into late November. And so the dynamic continued with very mixed signals. And we kind of ended late in the year with some strength in the corn and soybean markets. And then at the very end here in December, we're seeing a little bit of price weakness with soybean prices about 70 cents off of their early December highs. Corn prices down about 20 cents. But for both commodities, continuing at fairly decent levels from a producer standpoint.
When was the best marketing opportunity for a producer during the calendar year for the 2009-2010 crop?
Well, I think we had a couple opportunities. One was spring with the late planting. We saw corn prices spike pretty good on that delayed harvest. We never quite got to the $5 futures price that many of us had hoped for, but that was probably one of our better opportunities. And then you would have to argue kind of in the late harvest period when prices rallied back. We did see some weakness in the basis, but futures prices rallied pretty nicely into late November, early December. So kind of early in the planting season and then late in the harvest season were some good opportunities for corn. Similarly for soybeans, we did see some more steady strength, I think more consistent strength in the soybean market because of the problems in South America and good Chinese demand. But we had a couple spikes, one early and one late.
Typically, historically, at least for corn, if not for soybeans, these would be sort of normal seasonal trends and where the marketplace spikes, I suppose, and offered opportunities producers might have known they should have taken advantage of.
It's not unusual, certainly, to see a spring, early summer type spike in the markets based on crop concerns. The difficulty always is, yes, we know we're moving higher because of crop concerns. What we never know is where the end of that is going to be. Will there be significant crop problems? Will the weather turn and we have good crops? In most years, weather scares, and we end up with decent weather and decent crops. But this year was kind of extreme with such late planting. I think there was a little more reluctance to take advantage of those early pricing opportunities. If you didn't have the crop in the field when you normally should have, I think farmers were a little more reluctant to take advantage of that price rally.
Does it tell us anything about the coming year at all?
I think each year, kind of the growing season, we would think of probably being fairly unique. What we do know going into 2010 from the supply side is, for the most part, we have plenty of soil moisture to the extent that influences yield potential. I think our models would suggest that it has some modest positive influence on yield potential, but certainly is not the most dominant factor in determining how the 2010 crop will turn out. So I don't think we have a lot of insight on weather potential for 2010 that would be helpful at this point. I think, you know, kind of the assumption of trend yield is probably still the best assumption at this point. On the demand side, what we are looking at this point is a potential for a fairly significant rebound in South American soybean production, more acres, although Argentina in particular is reporting maybe not quite as much shift away from corn to soybeans as earlier indicated. But more importantly, early in the growing season, weather conditions in most of South America are conducive for a return to more normal yields there. And USDA, for example, is projecting about a billion bushel increase in crop size in South America. If that happens, that in my mind is a bit of a game changer in terms of the demand for U.S. soybeans.
I was going to come back to the new crop a bit later in the program, but let's just flip it and stay with the new crop at the moment. At the Ag Econ Summits, the FarmDoc team hosted across the state of Illinois, just in the third week of December, I think that's right. Your suggestion was that 4 and 10 were two numbers you'd like to work with for the new crop pricing. Producers, I'm not sure, will be awful happy with at least the 4. They might be okay with the 10, I suppose, but the 4 will seem to be rushing along the bottom line of their margins and where they might be able to make money. 4 and 10 are your assessment, though.
You know, I think in terms of planning purposes right now, a $4 cash price and $10 soybeans is kind of a ballpark area I think is reasonable. I would admit that built into that kind of thinking is maybe the hope for or the expectation of some modest economic recovery in the U.S. and the rest of the world that would help support the demand side, and perhaps some modest inflationary pressure that also might have some short-term impact on commodity prices. I think the better news for 2010 for corn producers is that it appears that production costs will be down substantially. We know fertilizer prices right now are much lower than they were at this time a year ago, and that we're hoping that, that producers don't have to invest as much in drying the crop in 2010 as they did in 2009. So I think $4 would give producers a much better margin than what they've experienced so far on the 09 crop. We haven't seen a much $4 corn sold for 09, and we had pretty high production costs. So if farmers are overly concerned about prices moving lower, of course, right now the market is offering the opportunity to lock in some prices near $4 and near $10 for next year's crop. So that opportunity is out there, and I think will persist for a while, at least until we get into the 2010, get a better picture of just how fast the old crop is being used and acreage prospects for 2010.
So that's, just as a reminder, that's a $4 and a $10 cash price. So in central Illinois, we're talking $4.25, $4.30,
yeah,
something like that in Chicago, I suppose. Soybean has had just almost a miracle year in terms of exports for the 2009-2010 season. Much of that driven by China, their need, want to put stocks on hand. Will that dry up anytime soon? We thought it would dry up, at least many thought it would dry up by now, but it has not yet.
It has not. We have seen large Chinese purchases right through the first quarter of the 2009-2010 marketing year. So we have large sales on the books as well as large shipments to date. Total shipments of soybeans out of the U.S. in the first quarter, around 600 million bushels, which if you annualize that, that's well over 2 billion bushel export. We know we won't do that. That seasonally, if the South America has a decent crop, the world will turn to those supplies in the last half of our year. But to some extent, we're just interested in total demand. I mean, if China is going to suck up U.S. supplies or South American supplies, demand is demand, and it takes it off the plate. I think long term, China appears to be in the mood to maintain large inventories of a lot of commodities, including agricultural commodities. Because of the uncertainty of supplies and prices, and particularly for soybeans, their own inability to be self-sufficient. They're closer to being self-sufficient on corn, but soybeans, they're very dependent on the rest of the world for supplies, and it appears that they are being very aggressive in building inventories. One of the difficulties, of course, is trying to get any kind of accurate measurement out of China in terms of how big inventories are. USDA makes those estimates, but we don't feel that they're especially reliable because it's just very hard to get data information out of China. But they've pretty much stated publicly that that's their goal of building inventory. So, you know, you could argue it, well, at some point you get the pipeline full and you don't build any more, but since I think their process is going to be to keep that pipeline full continually. So I think inventory becomes a big demand factor for the foreseeable future.
Right. So really what it means is that while the South American crop was short last year and that caused an increase in the price of soybeans, once China started into the marketplace, it added, I think, new demand is the way we would call that. And do you think it's really shifted the demand curve to the right so that we have higher prices overall?
I think it has. It's done two things. I think it's shifted the overall demand curve, saying in the past you think of demand as demand for consumption. Now if you have demand for inventory as well, that does shift the demand curve, saying at a given price, the market is taking more soybeans than they have in the past. That's by definition a shift in demand. Secondly, is that there seems to be a seasonal shift that not only is China taking more soybeans, but it appears that they're taking them much earlier in our marketing year than they have in the past. If you just compare 09 to 08, first quarter, we've sold more than double the amount of soybeans to China that we did a year ago. So one of the interesting things that's going to unfold over the next few months is how front-loaded was the export demand this year. We know we can't maintain this pace, but how rapidly and when will the pace drop off, I think, is yet to be seen.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension. It's Todd Gleason in studio. With us today, ag economist from the University of Illinois, Daryl Good. Daryl, we'll continue our conversation. Let's stay with soybeans and China. An inventory increase or demand increase for soybeans has moved the curve, put a higher price in the soybean market. Is it different than what's happened in the corn market, or is it similar that ethanol has created a demand shift in the corn market?
No, I think it's conceptually the same in terms of its impact on price.
I mean, percentage-wise, right. I mean, it's left it at the ratio of, what, 2.3, 2.5? Is that right?
Well, when we look at distant prices, the ratio on corn to soybeans is in that 2.4 to 2.5 range, which is kind of its long-term average. If you look at just the spot price right now, we've got a higher ratio of soybeans relative to corn because of this extraordinary export demand that we've been experiencing. So the ratio is a little bit out of line right now, but when you're looking at planning for the 2010 crop, those ratios are at a more typical level for that crop.
All right. So we have new demand for both corn and soybeans. So we have new demand for wheat somewhere along the lines, too?
We do not. Not for U.S. wheat.
So that would shift the ratios then for wheat or spreads, I suppose.
It certainly has when you look at corn and soft red winter wheat prices in Illinois. Those ratios... You know, we typically have thought of wheat selling for, you know, we used to think of 75 cents a bushel higher or maybe a ratio of 1.3, 1.4 times the price of corn, something like that. Right now, you're seeing in some markets corn and wheat price about the same level. We've got to be a little careful because I think some of the wheat prices that we see quoted maybe reflect some real quality issues for the 2009 harvest. We know we've got some vomitoxin in parts of the state, and that tends to get reflected in the bid. So what you would hope is quoted as a number two soft red winter wheat, since vomitoxin is not a grade factor, you wouldn't think that would influence the bid, but it does to some extent. We think that if the buyers say, I know I'm going to get high vomitoxin wheat, I don't want a high price bid and then a huge discount scale when they bring it in. So I think the bids are faded a little bit to recognize the quality issues. But based on the quoted prices that we see, wheat price ratios are very low compared to corn.
Right? Yeah, so $10, $4, and $4.10.
Well, we do see some improvement in wheat prices, again, for the 2010 crop in the futures market. Now, the big question for SRW is going to be bases
and convergence,
and how much the cash prices can come up. But if we had a more typical historical basis in conjunction with today's futures prices for the 2010 crop, that would represent a pretty good recovery in cash wheat prices. We think there will be some recovery because we're anticipating another cut in SRW acreage in 2010 that was seeded in the fall of 2009. We'll see that on January 12th, that estimate. So I think there is some hope for a wheat price recovery, but right now, pretty low ratios relative to corn and soybeans.
When I think about the marketplace, and I want to take up two more issues, one of them is volatility. And when I think of the marketplace, I sort of think of supply and demand as a function of the goal in the future, where the price will end up, and we can call it the convergence price, if you want, or the cash price. And then I think of volatility as sort of the roadmap that we use to get there. But the swings in volatility have been pretty sharp. Are they actually bigger than we've really had in the past?
Well, certainly in terms of absolute magnitude of price swings, you know, over the last 2 years, they have been historically large. I mean, when you go from $8 beans to $13 beans, $5, that's historically a big swing. Corn, you know, we went from, you look at late 2006, we were at $3 and we went to $7. Percentage-wise, it's still a big swing, probably historically near the high that we've experienced. So if you just look at the range in prices, you'd say, yes, that by that measure of volatility, it has exploded. I think if you also look at the fluctuation in prices, how we move through the marketing year, and how often prices change, and how and what increments they change during the year, that definition of volatility, you'd say, yes, we've been very volatile. And I think if you measure it by option premiums, we would say, yes, we've had a lot of volatility in the market, which has made options a bit more expensive than they have been in the past. So I think just about by any measure, where you think in price range, frequency of changes, increments of change, option premiums, we're in a very unsettled market environment.
I had one on the options. I had one. I think it was Dan Bossi. We had a discussion about options and farmers using options to cover themselves and to get away from the volatility. But his suggestion was, relatively speaking, that if that many people were to move into options, then that they would, the price of options that farmers would want to use would be so much increased that it wouldn't be available to them as a place to manage risk.
Yeah. You know, if the argument that is increased volume of trading would increase the price, if that's the argument, I don't think that's correct. I think it's the same argument that we try to counter in the futures market, that just increased volume and increased activity does not necessarily increase futures prices, that to some extent, we would argue that the volatility and the higher prices attract volume, that the volume doesn't really cause the higher prices and the volatility. So that's a point of debate. You could argue that if the more volume you had, maybe the more competitively prices would be established. But either way, as long as you've got extreme volatility, option premiums are going to be pretty expensive. I mean, whether there's a lot of trading or not trading, they have to reflect, the premiums have to reflect the market's anticipation of the magnitude of volatility in the prices. And certainly when you're looking very far into the future and you get so much time between transaction and maturity, that time value is going to be very, very high, I think, on options.
So the way I've heard the FarmDoc team explain it is volatility, and we'll call that the index funds at the moment for the day, just to make it easy for people to understand, allows the marketplace to swing intraday or intraday during the day trade over to the top and to the bottom of the marketplace in a wider range, but doesn't really make too much difference in where the actual price ends up, because that's a function of supply and demand. And that it just says there's more risk in more opportunity.
I think that's right. And again, I think we have to be a little careful how we categorize funds. I mean, a lot of criticism has been made of the long-only index funds, but it's hard to argue that long-only contribute to volatility, that they come in and they stay. They stay long. The volatility, if it does happen, is from people getting in and out of the market. And to me, that's the more traditional speculators that we've seen in the commodity markets who are who are trading price change, who are not just in the market for the long haul like the long-only funds have been.
1 minute to tell me how producers should manage their risk for old and new crop.
Well, I think there's some opportunity here as you're looking toward the 2010 to manage some input cost risk by, to the extent we can, to lock in some fertilizer prices. I think there's some concern that with the lack of fall application of nitrogen in particular, some higher natural gas prices, that we may see some inflation on fertilizer prices to the extent there's potential, get those locked in. On the price side, I think, you know, if you can see $4 and $10 cash price out there for the O10 crop, get some on the books. A little more risky than if we had known the insurance price by now, that would be helpful. We don't know the crop insurance revenue prices, but still 4 and 10, I think, on some portion of the crop is a good risk management strategy.
Ag economist Darrell Good from the University of Illinois. You've been listening to Commodity Week. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a good week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.